I'm going to call the House Transportation Committee to order and welcome everybody. We have two bills up, and we have the members for both of these bills. So I'm going to go ahead and kind of reverse it because I don't think we have anyone else signed up on House Bill 2538. So I'll have Representative Tomei come forward.
And, thank you, Madam Chair.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2538.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Carolyn Tomei, and I represent.
You want me to have Patrick introduce this? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm
but
sorry.
You're okay.
Sure.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2538 requires that vehicles while traveling on a highway use their headlights at any time when they're operating their windshield wipers, except when operating windshield wipers solely for the purpose of cleaning their windshield.
Thank you. Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, as I was about to say, I'm Carolyn Tomei, State Representative from House District 41, which is Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. It's a pleasure to be in front of you again today to offer my support for House Bill 2538, a bill that requires the use of headlights when someone turns on their windshield wipers. The reasons for my support for this bill are simple. It's about safety. Oregon gets a lot of rain. Many parts of our state have up to and over 45 inches of rain annually. When it is raining, snowing, or if there's moisture in the air, we often turn our windshield wipers on in order to get rid of that moisture. When any of these adverse weather conditions occur, reduced visibility also occurs. In order to combat this reduced visibility, this bill will make it necessary to turn on your headlights. It's both about you being able to see and also about people being able to see you on the road before a collision occurs. This bill will greatly increase vehicular safety. In potentially treacherous conditions, it's both common sense and important to make your vehicle as visible as possible. You're more likely to see a car if its headlights are on. In fact, most of the newer cars do turn on the headlights whenever the windshield wipers are on. My car is an older model car. I think it's 12 or 13 years old, and I have to make an effort to turn my lights on. Many insurance companies, including American Equity Insurance Company and State Farm, advocate for turning on lights when your windshield wipers are on. Research has shown that even in ideal driving conditions, turning on your lights is a significant way to prevent accidents. Drivers changing lanes in front of you are more apt to notice your lights, especially in adverse weather conditions, when visibility or mirrors are impeded by water. As I said, almost all new models of vehicles that are equipped with automatic running daytime lights, a move that coincides with what this bill is trying to promote. A slew of other states, including California, New York, Arkansas, Illinois, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, have already enacted similar legislation. You can see that in your handout. This bill will strengthen current law and promote public safety, two of the many tasks we as legislators are assigned to do, and I urge you to move this bill forward with the due pass recommendation. Thank you, Madam Chair, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious as to where that state is called La La La. Couldn't resist, sorry.
I thought we were living in it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Boone.
Representative Berger.
Thank you. Good representative. Excuse me, there's something out this room that gets me every time. We're trying to stay in some sort of evidence-based mode here.
I knew you were going to ask
you know,
that.
And do you have any studies from these other states that definitively point to the safety improvements that might have occurred because of these kinds of laws? Knew I was going to ask.
I did. Madam Chair, Representative Berger, I don't have that in my file right now, but I discussed it with my staff before I came up here, and she said it's on the Internet, and she will provide that.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Representative.
You bet.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill forward.
Not me.
Not it. Just a quick observation. I ride a motorcycle, I ride a bicycle, but, and on my motorcycle, the headlight is locked on in the on position. I can't turn it off even if I wanted to. The car that I drive has headlights that are on all the time, regardless of what, how you choose to drive it. They automatically turn off. Frankly, I think it's appropriate safety to have your lights on at all times while you drive, and this is, a good first step towards getting there.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Bailey. I certainly agree with you, and as I said, most of, I think of the newer models do have lights that go on as soon as you turn the car on.
Representative Schaffler?
That is my point exactly, and when I realize my lights aren't on and I'm driving down the road, I'm actually startled, and that's, I don't know if we want to. I support your bill, Representative. But
thank you.
I mean, do any states have a law that says you must have your headlights on? And forgive me, I came in late. I may have missed
it. We started out with la, la, la. No, actually, we ended with la, la, la. So I'll start at the end. Virginia,
oh,
Tennessee,
it's okay,
South Carolina. They're all in my written material.
Forgive me. Forgive me. Thank you.
That's
very
okay.
Much.
But, yeah, they're all in here.
Great.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you. We should say forgive me for not looking at this a little sooner, but because I think there, and you might know this, Representative Tomei, but do we have laws like when visibility is poor that the lights have to be on now? Because, like, I have vehicles that I drive, and if I'm driving in the rain, one of them I don't even turn my headlights on. So just the way it's designed, and I always have Rain-X on the windshield. So, but the running lights are always on. So I'm just wondering if running lights are something like that would be good enough rather than just headlights.
And that I don't know, but I think somebody is here from the Department of Motor Vehicles. Maybe you can ask him.
So, because that was one of the things I was trying to glance through here, and I could see I wasn't going to find it right away, but I think there might be laws on the books already when the visibility is down where we are supposed to have our headlights on. And I'm just wondering if we want to fine people $360, I think it is.
It's actually $90.
Yes. This one here I had set up to 360, I thought.
See the bill?
Oh. $90. Okay. So that way when Representative Schaffler is startled and forgets he turned his lights on and the police lights are on behind him, writing him a ticket for $90, how happy is he going to be then? So for
if he avoids an accident, he might be very happy.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be saying that to the officer.
No.
So this could
he's
lead to police
guy.
Brutality.
Right.
I'll say, Representative, I'll say, officer, I of all people should be aware of the laws of this state. So write out your ticket.
Good answer.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Thank you. And we do have someone else signed up, and Representative Cameron had to go make a vote, so we'll go ahead and bring Sandra Bishop up. And
thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Sandra Bishop. I'm here representing the Driving School Association of Oregon. My members are the commercial driving schools that train people to drive, and we are in support of this bill. People that are running businesses that are members of this association are responsible for training approximately 80% of the teen drivers before they get their license, and this is 80% under the state-approved driver's ed programs. So I think Representative Tomei said it all, but this is definitely a safety measure. That's purely and simply what it's about. I don't have statistics to quote to you, Representative Berger, but I can say that some of our members have 30 or more years experience, and they are actually in the car with the inexperienced drivers, and they find that if those cars around them have lights on, those drivers, inexperienced as well as experienced, you know, older adults or learning driver, much more aware of the other vehicles. So would appreciate passing to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Appreciate it. And I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2538 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2542. And Representative Cameron, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's good to be for the chair from my other committee that I saw earlier today from La La Land.
La La.
He's not even listening. proud to be here today to talk about House Bill 2542. Give you a little bit of history of how I got involved in this personally and why I'm sponsoring this bill. I think that there's a lot of new technology out there and a lot of creative ways to get around. I wish I would have had an electric vehicle to run up and down the stairs just now to make a vote in judiciary. About a year and a half ago, our business purchased an electric motorcycle from a business here in town. You'll hear from a constituent, is actually a constituent and owns a business, I believe in Representative Clem's district, from Electric Wheels. And through that process of, I actually got to drive that electric motorcycle personally for about 300 miles myself to just test it out and make sure. And what I found out in that process is I could drive that electric motorcycle from the Capitol or from my office over on Commercial Street. I could drive it all the way out to my house, and I live outside the city limits, and I have to go out Liberty Road, which is a 45-mile-an-hour county road. And one day I went by to see Mr. Wells, and he had a four-wheeled vehicle there. The motorcycles are three-wheel. He had a four-wheel electric vehicle, and, of course, being the business guy, how much is this? And we started talking. He says, but you can't drive that to your house. And I said, why not? He said, because it's not a motorcycle. So I thought, well, that's strange. How do we fix this? And we did a little bit of research and found out that several states have passed a medium-speed vehicle law. Montana was the ideal legislation. We met with ODOT during the interim. It's actually, there's some, in the governor's transportation bill that you heard last Friday, the identical language is in that bill. And so we need to do this so that we can drive electric medium-speed vehicles and not force people into three-wheeled motorcycles on the same road. There's a way to get around it, but you got to be in a three-wheeled motorcycle. And if Representative Schaffler and I were in that, we'd have a hard time getting up a hill together.
No. But we have our lights on, Representative.
Yeah. The light was always on because it was a motorcycle.
Doesn't mean anybody's home.
There is, there is a
committee.
Little bit.
There,
yeah. There is a concern. I spoke with ODOT in the existing language in the bill. There is also an amendment that we've already had drafted up, should be with you today, that would fix that language. The intent of the bill was not to push this to state highways. It is only to allow cities and counties to pass the ordinance in their own area to allow these vehicles to go on roads of 45 miles an hour speed limits or less. You, under existing statute, you can cross a state highway. If a county road comes up to a state highway, you can still go across that. So that amendment would be the correct thing to do to make this a good bill for the state of Oregon and help people get into more electronic transportation as the technology changes.
Thank you. Questions, committee? Representative Schaffler.
Representative, thank you. I support your concept. Is this a green jobs bill?
Well, yes, it would be. What we got to do, though, Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, what we have to do is possibly attract to some enterprise zones without increasing the cost of doing business in those enterprise zones.
Prevailing wage.
I didn't say anything about that. To attract some of these manufacturers.
Absolutely.
To put these vehicles together here. But this could be a thing that would help people in the state of Oregon purchase these vehicles for transportation. You know, and today you can drive it on a 35-mile-an-hour zone, but if you get, and in the city of Salem, I'll just give you an example, if you have to go down Kubler, you couldn't do it. So this would allow people to have these vehicles.
I have a Representative Boone Widener call. I thought it's Bailey.
Chair. Is this like a golf cart? Is that what it is?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, no, this would not apply to a golf cart. These vehicles have to pass federal regulations. There are safety standards. ODOT could testify more to the details of that, but this is not your typical golf cart that you could drive off of the golf course onto the road.
Follow up. So it's a, but it's an enclosed type car. It's not a smart car.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Boone, it is an enclosed vehicle.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I have a little bit of an issue, and maybe this goes safety side, but if we get a lot of these electrical cars out on there and they're running 35 and a 45, we're going to have a situation where people are wanting to get around them and pass them, and I worry about that because now that's when you have the accidents on blind corners and issues like that, and I'm just wondering if you took that into account when you guys were drafting this bill.
Madam Representative Widener, I know safety is always a concern, and safety's first, as we always say in our business, and last. And this allows cities, the local authority, to be able to do this. If they thought it was a safety hazard in their particular area, they certainly could not implement this rule. The other fact is, as these vehicles change in technology, the speed of these vehicles also will increase. And the distance they're able to travel on a charge will increase, as we've already seen in the last year and a half. So this is a step in the right direction. Obviously, I would not want to be going 35 with your big red diesel truck that's coming up on my bumper without pulling over and letting you go around. And to follow up on Representative Boone's question, even the motorcycle that I spoke of that was electric motorcycle, it was enclosed.
Enclosed.
Yeah, it was enclosed and held two people. And you'll see them on the streets of Salem today. They're actually considered a motorcycle, but they're three-wheeled vehicles that have four seats in them. But they're considered motorcycles. And you don't have to wear a helmet because they're enclosed.
Mm. Okay, thanks.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I was wondering if you could address again briefly the Dash 1 amendment. My understanding is that it reduces from 45 to 40 miles an hour. What was the rationale for that amendment?
Well, the intent of the bill, Madam Chair and Representative Bailey, the intent of the bill was not to allow somebody to get into their medium-speed vehicle and drive up to Detroit Lake up a state highway. The intent of the bill was to allow them to travel in more metropolitan areas and at times where those speed limits were increased for short distances to be able to get there. So state highways are obviously long distances, and ODOT, and you can maybe have ODOT clarify the reason for exactly 40 miles an hour. I don't think there's too many state highways that are under 40. So that would allow a state highway that goes through a town, for example, where if you were, let's use a Highway 22 here, if Highway 22 is running through the city of Salem and it's under 40 miles an hour, you could be on that highway in this particular law. But when it gets to 45, you're going to have a problem, which is out on your way to Detroit or someplace like that. I hope that was
follow-up?
That's a helpful clarification. I appreciate that. Just a follow-up to the observation the good representative made about green jobs. There are significant manufacturers already in Oregon that are producing these kinds of vehicles with good manufacturing jobs, and they need this legislation to be able to put people to work. And I thank you for bringing this bill forward.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Representative Call.
Yeah, Representative, thank you for coming in. I've heard a little rumor up here that you actually own one of these three-wheeled varieties, and if this were to come into effect, that you might get a four-wheeled version, and I'd just like to ask you for a ride sometime, because I'm pretty intrigued by the whole idea.
Madam Chair and Representative Call, I would be happy to give you a ride. In fact, I know a gentleman is sitting behind me to my left that you could go and visit him, and he can give you all kinds of rides and take your money real fast.
Well, I don't see any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And then I have Mr. Larry Dye. Welcome.
Madam Chair. I'm Larry Dye. I'm the president and CEO of Electric Wheels Incorporated over on 12th Street here in Salem. The difference between the medium speed and the low speed law isn't really that much difference as far as where you can drive it. What it's basically allowing us to do, instead of driving a electric car 25 mile an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone, which really upsets a lot of people on Lancaster, especially if anybody lives in Salem, you can do 35 in a 35 without any hassle at all. And at 5 o'clock when you're driving home in Salem, when do you go more than 20 mile an hour anyway? But that's besides the point. The concept of the Madam Chair, Representative Bailey, you asked about the 40 mile an hour change was for highways, and I think he expressed that highways within a city limits is basically puts us in a situation where medium speed vehicles within the city limits, and 95% of the owners of these vehicles are going to drive them in the city limits anyway. People that live 4 or 5 miles from work, they want to be able to go to work and come home and not have to worry about if they're speeding, not have to worry about if there's a truck climbing up their backside. What they're doing is they're promoting the idea of driving green, and driving green is driving electric. And I am wholeheartedly involved with manufacturing companies right this minute to bring the medium speed vehicles to Salem, Oregon, to be the distributor for the U.S. And these cars are not golf cart sized cars by no means. They are 12 foot long, they're 5 foot four wide, they're 5 foot six and a half tall. It's a lot like a Honda SRV crossover. They're almost the same exact size as one of them Honda crossovers. So it's not a small car, and it's not a small motor-driven car. It is a car that's capable. In China right now, they're running at 55 mile an hour for 65 miles on a charge. But we will have the controllers adjusted for our medium speed law here in the state of Oregon to do exactly what we state here that we would like for it to be able to do. And so these are roll cage, just like any car on the street today. They're roll bar protected within their own sheet metal. They're a solid steel frame construction. They're not made of fiberglass. I believe Troy from DOT and when we had our committee meeting early in last August, 12th, day before I went to China, one of the things we was looking at is some of the low-speed vehicles would like to tune theirs up to run 35 and a 45, but my understanding, and I think Troy and I agreed on this, was the manufacturers in the U.S. have an aluminum unibody. It would fold up worse than a beer can if it got hit at 35. I wouldn't recommend it to be a medium speed. Or the roadsters that are aluminum I-beam construction. I wouldn't recommend it being, it doesn't even have doors or a top. So, I mean, they're a low-speed vehicle. That's what they're made for. But the medium-speed vehicles that I am hopefully bringing in shortly will be a fully enclosed, full-structured steel frame, 35-mile-an-hour medium-speed legal.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. As time goes on and more people have these, get accustomed to them, get used to them, as the technology improves, eventually these will be on the highway and people will save money, and they will have design that is safe for literally hauling your kids. As far as the scenario of somebody in one of these vehicles getting in front of me doing 25 and a 45, well, there's great big diesel pickups that do that all the time right now, and they drive me to distraction. Not my friend from Yamhill County, of course. He's clear down the road, and I'm trying to catch up to him. But my question, though, and I'm interested in this, one, how many people do you employ now? My friend, my representative here from Portland says that Manufacturing them in this state is and is a real possibility. If it isn't already, I think you said it was. How do you have any projections or any model data from other states where they've done this, where how you your business will expand, your number of employees will increase, anything like? Do you have any information like that? Because I think this is really a great idea,
Madam Representative. I've already got it on paper, what we've looked at. I've already had meetings with several of the government officials about them bringing this vehicle in. We're looking at a possibility going from 3.5 employees, so to speak, to as many as 40, and have a possibility of bringing the assembly to the U.S., and that's what I'm trying to make happen as we speak, and set up the manufacturing right here in Salem for these. Also, for a bonus for that, if you got the horse, you also need the cart. I have just taken over the dealership for the charging stations now also, and I spent some time talking about that with a representative earlier today. So I not only have the horse, but I got the cart too.
Good.
And it's a big, being the pioneer in this industry. I was the first electric vehicle dealership in the state of Oregon, and I've seen the ups and downs of this industry as far as the fraud that's out there, as any other fraud is. Take your money and never get a car. I've been to China 8 times in the past 2 years, so I know the people. I have a representative for my business there all the time, 24/7. I got an email from him before I came here. What's up? he makes sure that things are going right for me over there while I'm here. But, we're planning on doing this right the first time. I don't want to have to bring them here and then go to Troy's DOT and go, oh, what do we do to fix this? That's not his job. That's my job. And with the experience and knowledge that I've brought to the industry, I hope that we can expand to the freeway car here within the next 8 months, right here out of Salem.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps you could let us know what the cost is of recharging the car for 65 miles and the length of time it takes.
You're looking at, it would be 8 hours is approximately 5 kilowatt hours, depending on what you pay per kilowatt hour. 5 cents a kilowatt hour, 25 cents to recharge your car in a day at your home, or if you are downtown with our charging stations available, you'll have a card. You can swipe your card, plug in, charge, and each session is it's either paid by session or you can pay a monthly fee to charge all day downtown. But that's not going to start till next year. This year, they're going to let everybody use the stations for free to all the rest of the 09. But,
Madam Chair, so just so I understand, the 8 hours will allow you to drive how far? The 8 hour recharge, is that what I just heard?
65 miles.
You can go
per charge.
Okay,
yeah.
And it takes a follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
It takes 5 hours, 6 hours to recharge.
Anywhere, yeah. Depending on the car, a lot of the cars are different. Some of them are 4 to 6 hours, some of them are 6 to 8 hours. Depending on the car that you purchase, the car Representative Cameron had. It was a three-wheel motorcycle truck, actually. We have the four-door sedan also in the three-wheel. And it's a 4 to 6 hour recharge, and it'll run 35 to 40 mile an hour. But because it's a motorcycle, it doesn't fall into the MS law. It's a motorcycle. So you kind of go around that. But this car here that I'm getting ready to import is already set up to where at 50 mile an hour it'll run 65 miles on a charge. Now we're going to tweak the speed back down to 35. Now you're probably going to have 70 to 80 mile range.
Any other questions? I guess I had a couple, and you, the one about the charging stations, are they in existence?
Yes, they are,
point?
Ma'am. They're running them in Las Vegas and in San Francisco, and the municipalities down there are running them right now, this
minute. And I think Portland is. I was just thinking here.
Different type of charger.
Nothing in Salem right now.
Totally different type of charging station. With all due respect, they're doing the best they can, but I think that I have 10 times of the charger for a whole lot less money.
Okay. And the other question is, without, you know, wanting to be too precise, but in comparison to buying just a gas car and one of these, price-wise, how do they compare?
The three-wheel cars I have right now that are 08s, brand new, ready to roll out the door, $8,995. You can take it off, and you get a federal tax credit and a state tax credit for purchasing this car, 10% from the federal and up to $1,500 from the state. So that makes it pretty cheap, and it's about a penny and a half a mile to drive on your electric bill. So it's very, very cheap. No oil changes, no tune-ups, no anything like that. Now, the new car I got coming in, our target is a five-seat crossover-type vehicle. It is a full-size vehicle. It's got a way bigger motor, everything, so it'll definitely keep up with traffic anytime you need to keep up with traffic or get up and down the hill anytime you need to do that. So now my target is less than $14,000. That's my target. I don't know yet. I haven't got a finalized price from China on my cost yet.
And another curiosity question, I guess, is the battery life in these vehicles.
Depending on the battery that, Madam Chair, sorry. Depending on the battery system that we put into the vehicle will depend on what the longevity, lifetime, recharge time is. The colloid battery that some of them are using now over there has like a 800 to 1,000 recharge value. If you get into a lithium battery, you're looking at 2 to 4,000 recharge value. Yeah, the lithium is going to cost you a little bit more, hair over double the cost, but you're going to get almost 10 times the life.
I always hesitate to announce my ignorance, but 2 to 4,000 recharge.
That would be like 8 to 12 years.
Okay.
I'm sorry, madam.
Right, that's okay.
Here's. I've been actually retailing the lithium batteries to the U.S. for over 2 years from China at the best price anybody can buy them anywhere. Actually. There is a car in the U.S. right this minute. It's a 5,000-pound 59 Lincoln Continental owned by Neil Young that's running my lithium batteries pack in his car right this minute. And he's running it 65 mile an hour down the highway, and he's getting 65 to 80 miles on a charge with no problem at all. So the technology's here. It's just a lot of people, I guess, don't know enough about my in-depthness in this.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Well, maybe Mr. Young should come here and testify for us.
Yeah.
Bring his guitar.
There you go. I wish he'd put on a benefit for me.
Yeah. Put on a benefit for
a benefit.
I don't see any other questions, so. Oh, I do. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just. Do you know of any other manufacturers or anybody else doing this here in Oregon? Because I know I actually almost bought an electric car here a couple of years ago, which was a Tesla, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with them.
Yes, I am. They're not in Oregon, though.
They're not in Oregon. They're in California, and they manufacture them there. But I'm just wondering, in Oregon, do we have anybody else besides yourself?
That's a dealer?
Yeah. Or that's, well, not a dealer looking at actually building the cars here, possibly.
Just me.
Just you.
And Madam Representative, I know that the governor went to China. I got back just a few days before he left to go talk to BYD. I know the BYD people. I was pretty shocked that I have yet to have a sit-down conversation with the governor himself to, you know, to be able to... I know what he's trying to do, but I know enough people in China that it could have simplified it for him. Know exactly who to go to and who to talk to and make the deal happen. It's what I do. That's why I've been there 8 times the last 2 years. I do it because I know the...
Yeah,
and just on that, I'm very close to the guy who's heading up the task force for the governor on electric cars. If you'd leave your information for how to get a hold of you, I mean, if you'd like to have a conversation with guys involved in that, I'd be more than happy to facilitate that discussion. If you've got,
I'll give you a business card right now.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you. If you could just give
you want
it
to have
back,
it too, to yeah. And I don't see any other questions. Thank so you. Thank you for your testimony and thank you for coming.
Very welcome. Thank
and
you.
Troy.
Just generally.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales, Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And just cut to the quick on a couple things. First is that the definition of a medium-speed vehicle is relatively new, so the responsibility falls onto my office to go through and create rules that take the current low-speed vehicle standards and then increases them to the larger vehicle, and as you've heard, Representative Cameron also talk about the style and design. As you see on the first page of the written testimony, there are already a handful of states that have adopted the classification of a medium-speed vehicle and where they limit the speed. Appreciate Representative Cameron and bringing forward to you the Dash 1 amendments, which deals with the state highway side. And he was right on in his conclusion, his conversation. We want to be careful that we adapt and balance safety with capability of the vehicle. And that's what's important around the Dash 1 amendments. As you had heard previously in the Governor's Jobs and Transportation Act, there is this exact same language that's in there. Proposing this classification allows an incentive for citizens to purchase vehicles with a lesser impact to the environment, and also limiting these on the state highway side to the 40 and less. It does deal with, as Representative Winder had mentioned, others I think had nodded their heads to the conversation about the interaction with traffic and the capability of those vehicles. The Dash 1 does bring the House Bill 2542 in alliance with what the governor proposed in his bill that you just discussed last week. The summary basically is, as was brought up, is it's all about safety and making sure that when we're dealing with a brand new style and type of vehicle that we are blending that into the current expectation of all of us on the transportation system for these vehicles to operate the way we expect them to, and to operate within the flow and manner of traffic in order to keep everybody involved, including the operator and passengers in this new type of vehicle, safe when they're on the public's roads. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. Can you give me an example of, and maybe I'm not understanding this correctly, of a place where you would have a state highway posted at 45 that would be connected to a state highway or city street that is posted lower than that, where you would not want these vehicles?
Madam Chair and Representative Bailey, there are examples within town here, there are examples within Portland as well, where the style of the road has very few intersections or interchanges. And that's one of the situations where then the speed goes up because you have less and you may have a city street that comes across that there's a traffic signal. City street's 25, but the main highway going through there may be posted at 45 or so. Yeon Street, the beginning of Yeon Street in Northwest Portland, is an area you get in some of the, within Salem, Mission Street, Highway 22, has cross streets that are 35 that extend across. I think Representative Cameron pointed out that if you're on a city street or even a state highway where they cross each other, you're on a 25 or a 35 and you have the ability to cross, you can go across the higher speed. This would limit them from not being able to get on to the higher speed where their speed differential would be so huge. for the traffic on the 45 plus on the highway system.
Is there any concern that there are locations within cities that would be relatively inaccessible or difficult to access because you cannot take a state highway that's posted at 45 miles an hour?
Madam Chair and Representative Bailey, I'm pretty sure there are probably going to be those situations where the state highway is classified higher. What's written into the bill is the ability for the city or the county, for the roads they own, right now up to 45, this vehicle would be allowed on it. If there was, for the most part, you're going to see this in county road situation, less so in a city street, that could be posted at 50 or 55. If that city council or county commission wanted to allow a medium-speed vehicle to operate on that stretch, they can. My hope is that in the situations where the state highway may, you know, is 45 plus, that there is an alternative route, you know, by using a surface street that may take you a block or two away. But the concern on the safety side is not having somebody in a situation where these vehicles do not meet passenger car standards, the full set. And so the concern is putting them in situations where you have doubles and triples for and a higher volume and higher expectation of the traveling public to not cause, unfortunately, a set of turbulence or get them into a situation where they're around other vehicles. If it becomes, my guess, if assuming this goes through and this was to become law, if there were spots where the state highway was it and it was 45 and above, that would end up being something being brought to you to say there needs to be some sort of allowance or exception. But on a blanket statewide, that the concern is not putting these folks in harm's way, putting them in a spot where the flow of traffic and the types of traffic around them are much different.
Final follow-up, Madam Chair. Is there any concern that this might induce some confusion for drivers about where they can and cannot drive their vehicles? I think most people are often unaware whether they're on a state road or a county road or a city road.
Madam Chair and Representative Bailey,
I know.
My hope, very similar to what we see with the low speed, is there's an interaction with the individual that's making that purchase and by the dealers and owners, letting them know really clearly, you know, what's allowed or not allowed, because it wouldn't be in the industry's best interest to have people getting tickets because they're going to come right back to the who sold them the rig and didn't tell me that, you know, you didn't tell me I couldn't go here. And state highways are signed with a placard. The big deal here is that in this particular case, this really hinges on what's the speed limit, what's the sign say, and that's going to be for most people the trigger as to what's allowed or not.
Representative Berger, and then we have Schaffler and Dent.
Troy, I've seen Representative Cameron's three-wheeled motorcycle. I thought it was a car. What's the difference between that rig and this rig in terms of what it can do legally, where it can go?
Madam Chair and Representative Berger, state statute defines a motorcycle as two or three-wheeled. So that's, even though it's an enclosed cab, sometimes you see meter readers. It's probably more often than what people can think of because that's where you typically see them. They're enclosed, therefore they don't have to wear a helmet, but they do have to wear a safety belt. Depending upon what they are allowed, statute, what their top speed is, statute defines what type of roads they can go on, whether it be 25 or 35, based on the capability of the engine in that particular vehicle. This one creates a brand new set, very similar in past history. The legislature has dealt with the Segway, has dealt with motorized scooters. The legislature has put in place policy calling out special vehicles and lining them up as far as their registration, their insurance, whether you're licensed or not, and what speed roads you can go on. So there's not one spot, one style that three-wheeled vehicle can go or not go. It's going to depend on the class of engine and how fast that particular rig can go on a flat surface, and the size of the engine defines which type of road it can go on.
I get it. I think I get it.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I'm not wrong. Our two-lane highways in the state are all 55. The only place, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the only place is 65 is on the interstate. But even if that isn't the case, I believe the vast majority of them are 55 miles an hour. Now, I can ride a motorcycle. I can ride a scooter. I can ride my bicycle on those highways. Now, underneath, if I'm not wrong, correct me if I am, legally, So I really struggle with the logic of, but we're not going to allow these vehicles on those highways. And I understand our desire and need for safety, and I don't want to undermine that, nor do I question your desire to make this state. But logically, it just doesn't make any sense to ban these vehicles where I can ride my bicycle. I'm not asking you to even comment on it, because it isn't your fault. But I'm just trying to figure that out in my head.
Representative Benz, unless you have a response.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This probably builds on a remark you made just a moment ago about the other segments of the law. So I have a car, let's say, that goes 36 miles an hour. What governs my 36 mile an hour car? Electric car fits all the rest of these standards, but my maximum speed is 1 mile more than what we have here.
Madam Chair and residents, the classification of the medium speed vehicle is not going to be dependent upon engine size. What this is saying is that it has the capability of doing 35 miles per hour on a flat surface. But it's an electric motor, whereas the legislature in the past has chosen, particularly for as I mentioned before, the motorized scooters, whether it's electric bike or not, has set engine size and capability as one of the measures versus the speed, because there's also combustion engine definitions and those other types of vehicles. We're not talking about that here, that it's electric only. So this is a different way of defining this vehicle than some of the other things that are currently in statute.
Follow up. Yeah, my question is this. This appears to say that if the definition of medium-speed electric vehicle is one that can attain a maximum speed of 35 miles per hour, and thus I must stay off any road that's, I think, 40 miles an hour or less. But now I have one that will go 30. Let's have it 40 miles. Does that now mean I can go on any of those roads in the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz. The two parts of this are that the vehicle has a maximum speed of 35, and it can go on any state highway 40 or lower, any city street or county road that's 45 or lower, because the intent by the sponsor was to say, as he said, an urban-based vehicle. If you now have a vehicle that is going to be able to attain a speed higher than 35, it will need to follow the passenger car federal definition and all the safety equipment and standards of a standard passenger car, is that this statute within Oregon says there's going to be a special set aside for electric vehicles at 35 that don't have to meet all the standards of a Toyota Camry, or a Chevrolet Impala or anything that goes with it. There's less of a list of things safety-wise that the manufacturer has to meet.
I think I now understand my 36 mile an hour car would have to have all of the protections for me, but we haven't protected those that want to get around us. We can go very slowly on these other roads, but we will be protected inside our appropriately regulated designed car.
Yes.
But the people that are frustrated behind us are frustrated. does that capture the situation?
I don't know that I have an answer, Madam Chair.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to help Troy out here a little bit, and Representative Bentz actually hit on it slightly, it's avoiding those frustrations on some of the back roads that are 55 miles an hour, and most people are probably driving above 55, and they come up behind a bunch of these. It's not like getting around a bicycle that's on the side of the road. That's easy to go by. These are full-size cars, so even the three-wheeled ones are full-size. So you're going fast enough that they're hard to pass, and you're going to create circumstances where we could be facing accidents. And I don't know if Troy was not wanting to touch on that, but I think he understands the situations that can occur from these, because it's not like going around a bicycle. Am I correct, Troy?
Madam Chair, Mr. Widener, you're correct, and the legislative body has last session actually talked about bicyclists on, an example was used on US 101, when there's a group and what, as a car driver, you need to do and the ability to pass. and there is definitely a size difference between, you know, the bicycle and which has a lower speed capability, and then full size vehicles.
Representative Shockley.
I just can't resist, though, and that's exactly right. And bicycles who aren't paying their fair share for the roads, they hold up traffic now the way it is, though. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if they're legal or not, but they do it already. So, you know, and we're going to ban these vehicles where it's already going on. So logically, that would lead you to a conclusion that we shouldn't allow bicycles out there on them highways. Now, I'm not suggesting that. I think they should, if they want to share the road, they should help pay repair the road. But that's another issue. And I'm not asking for a hearing on that bill either. But I just, you know, if you figure this out, if you did some syllogisms here, logically, we're allowing one technology on the road that's creating all these problems and potential hazards, yet we're going to continue to ban another technology that would do the same, but at the same time transport more people and emission-free. It just doesn't add up for me, and eventually they are going to be going. We could make them go fast enough right now. So I just, what I would do is amend the bill, let them all on there, take the speed restrictions off, and then Ralph Nader would probably be out here saying, no, that's outside of the federal safety standards. So I know we're bumping up to a lot of things here, but it just doesn't make any sense to me in the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shockley. And I don't see any other questions, so with that,
thank you
for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We also should be included at each spot. We have two pieces of testimony. One of them is in support of House Bill 2542 from Trevor Steele, legislative analyst with the City of Eugene. The other one is a message that I received regarding this measure from Kat Iverson, who you may recall spoke regarding medium-speed electric vehicles during our testimony on House Bill 2120. Last week. So those are both included in your packet as well.
And with that, thank you, and we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2542, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2040. Patrick, remind us of where we're at.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2040, we've heard twice before, February 18th and February 23rd. This bill is the one that expands the offense of failure to maintain a safe distance from emergency vehicles or ambulances to also include roadside assistance vehicles and tow vehicles. At our first meeting, we heard that we may need amendments. The second meeting, we heard that we didn't, in fact, need the amendments we thought we needed, but we found out we needed different amendments. So before you, you have, be photocopied to the back of your staff measure summary, the 2040-1 amendments, which insert on line 15, there was a concern that the bill is written, the statute is written for the move-over law, requires drivers to slow down if they are unable to move over, but it doesn't say how much they have to slow down. So there was a concern that a driver could be doing 75 miles an hour in a 65, and if they slow down to 70, that they would be qualifying as slowing down, even though they were not slowing down below the posted speed limit. So the amendments address that by adding language in there to say that a vehicle that slows rather than moves over must slow down to at least 5 miles per hour below the posted speed limit. That's the amendment. And you have attached a minimal expenditure impact and a no revenue impact for the bill with those amendments, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And committee, Mr. Campbell's in the back if we have any questions. Otherwise, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill. We need to move the
amendment.
Dash one.
We need to move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I move Dash one's House Bill 2040.
Representative Shockler has moved Dash one amendment to House Bill 2040, dated 3/2/09. Any discussion?
And I'll support the bill to move it forward and everything, but I still think that on the highway, if you're talking about 65 miles an hour on I-5, moving down to, if you can't move over, 60 miles an hour, if you get hit by someone going 60 miles an hour, it's not a lot better than if you were going 65. So that being said, if I had my way and were queen for a day, I would say that we have a posted speed sign on Highway 26 at a point that's a very bad bump in the road. We've asked Timeless, every since I moved there, we've asked ODOT to shave it down. It's, you know, the answer comes back, it's too expensive. So they posted that bump at 30. And the cop can sit right there, and she can ticket you going 35 or 55. You're going 60 anyway. It's a 55, and we've had people hit on that bump, bicyclists on the side, all kinds of things. And the worst bad scene I saw at that, and that was the bicyclist got hit, was on the car. The emergency vehicles were there, and they darn near hit the car out from under the guy out from under the gurney out from under the guy as he was being loaded in the ambulance. And that was all because they were still going that same speed, although they claimed they were going 50. But that, just thank you for indulging me, Madam Chair. Just a comment.
And I just want to say that I think you're probably right in that it isn't slow enough, but at least it gives the emergency people, the police, you know, a line to be able to cite them under, mm-hmm. as opposed to not having that. So I think that's the important piece. So no other discussion? Any objections? The -1 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2040, the floor as amended with due pass recommendation.
It has been moved by Representative Schaffler that the House Bill 2040, as amended, be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Bench.
Aye.
Representative Berner.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Hall?
Aye.
Chair Byer?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, the bill is passed. Is there anyone who has a strong feeling about carrying this bill?
I'll do it.
Okay. Thank you, George. Representative Gilman.
George is on.
With that, we are close the work session on House Bill 2040, and we are adjourned.